It's a pleasure to be here at Strinx, and I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. I'd like to talk about some work I did with Lars Grant, Joe Marsano, and Kyriakos Papadodimos from Harvard, and Liat Maoz, who is also in Amsterdam. And the paper appeared about 2 months ago, and the second paper, which is to appear. So in the first paper, we set up the general framework and considered some examples, and some of our answers were factor of 2 off, but now that is in the second paper that's settled, and we can also consider the general droplet case. And I also have to thank Shiraz Mizwala and Avinash Tkhar for collaboration at the early stages. So the goal of this project is to learn to quantize moduli spaces of supergravity solutions. And our original motivation was to apply it to bubbling ADS solutions, which Juan discussed, but now it sort of grows into a more general program and has potentially many applications. So the plan is that I first want to discuss mini superspace of quantization, which is a method which we're applying, and a particular covariant manifestation of it, which goes under the name of Stankovich-Witten-Zuckerman method. And here the key concept is the symplectic current. And then in the second part, I'm going to discuss how this general framework applies to the example of bubbling ADS. And here I'll show how to do some simple approximation, wavy-line approximation around the plane wave background, and then also how you can consider the general droplet case. So the basic question is, how do you quantize gravity solutions? And of course, and there are some cases when we know how to do it. For instance, if you have fluxes, then those fluxes are going to be typically quantized by some kind of Dirac quantization condition in the units of some elementary flux. But now, suppose that you have a moduli space which corresponds to all, keeping all fluxes fixed. So the question is, how do you quantize such a moduli space? So Dirac quantization doesn't help. And that's the question I would like to discuss in my talk. And recently there are examples popping up where this is actually happening. So recent examples, of course, are the bubbling ADS geometries. And these have some non-trivial topology. And also the important example are D1, D5 geometries with angular momentum, which were mentioned by Yosef. Those are interpreted as a regular black hole microstates in Matur's program. And in these two examples, we know the microscopic description. So we know the description in the first case, it's free fermion droplets, free fermions. And in the second case, it's the chiral excitations of the fundamental string, four-dimensional curve. So we can use this microscopic description in order to quantize the moduli space of solutions in these particular cases. But now what we want to do is to be able, so this microscopic description is, in the first case, it's in both cases, it's derived somewhat indirectly. So what we would like to learn is how to derive this kind of dual descriptions directly from supergravity without using any picture, using, like in the first case, we had to use the giant gravitons. In the second case, there was some dualities mapping on the fundamental string solution. So we would like to learn how to quantize the moduli space using just the regular supergravity solution. And the general idea is quite simple. What you have to do is, when you have a theory, that theory is going to come to you with a symplectic form, which is defined on the full phase space of the theory. And when you take your given class of supergravity solutions, it's going to be some subspace in that full phase space. And all you have to do is just to restrict the symplectic form from the full phase space to the moduli space M. And once you've done that and expressed the symplectic form in terms of functions characterizing the solution, you can go to the second step and quantize just by using the Dirac restriction for the commutators. And just to be on the safe side, let's consider the simplest example. So how do you quantize a chiral boson using this method? Well, you start from the symplectic form of the chiral boson, and which is the integral over fixed time slice of delta phi dot veg delta phi, and delta is the exterior differential, which produces U1 forms on the symplectic space, on the phase space. And this symplectic form is related to the action of the chiral boson. So you find it once and for all, and that's the only piece of off-shell information that you need. Then you take your modulized space of solutions, which in our case we just take, left-moving solutions, which are characterized by an arbitrary function. And now you restrict the symplectic form omega capital to this modulized space, and you get some expression which is expressed entirely in terms of the function f characterizing the moduli space. So it's integral delta f prime wedge delta f. And that's all you need, because now once you know this omega, you can derive the Poisson bracket of f and f prime equals delta function. And once you know the Poisson bracket, you promote it to the commutators and you quantize. And that's the end of the story. So this is, of course, the result is completely equivalent to first quantizing the full theory and then just restricting yourself to a chiral sector by putting all the right movers into their vacuum state. So this is the kind of method you would like to apply in a more general theory of in the context of gravity. So the word of warning which I would like to add right now, that this is not what was known as moduli space approximation in the sense of Manton. So let me remind you that in the Manton story you typically have static solutions corresponding to multi-centered solitons or black holes. And those are characterized, have a finite dimensional moduli space characterized by the coordinates of those solitons and maybe some other extra parameters. And then you can discuss, you can give those solitons or black holes small velocity and discuss scattering. And that scattering is going to be described by geodesics in some metric, which you can compute. And once you have this metric, you can later on discuss the quantization of this scattering process. But what I would like to point out is that in that case, when you give the velocities to your solitons, you extend your phase space is not 3n-dimensional anymore, it's 6n-dimensional. And if you were to restrict the symplectic form to the original 3n-dimensional moduli space, it would be degenerate. So you wouldn't derive, in particular, any black hole center quantization out of this story. And of course, this is not surprising. Well, in our case, the symplectic form is not going to be degenerate. It's going to be non-degenerate when restricted to the moduli space. And you will derive some non-trivial quantization of the moduli space. And this is related to the fact that in our case, there is some dynamics. Usually, typically, there is some angular momentum. So the symplectic form is going to be non-degenerate. So once, since we are going to discuss theory of gravity, we have discussed the symplectic form of gravity, and the most direct method to get the symplectic form is just go to the canonical formalism. So we will be working with, in this talk, with regular solutions, and in particular, I will make assumption that there is no horizon, which makes the situation simpler. And so we will assume that there is some initial value surface. An obvious choice, there's always going to be some obvious choice of the initial value surface. And in the canonical formalism, what you do is that you put your metric in the 3 plus 1 split form, in the EDM form, and your phase space variables become the metric on the initial value surface H and the corresponding canonical momenta, which are related to the extrinsic curvature of your Cauchy surface. And then those momenta satisfy a certain number of constraints, but for us, it's of no importance in this problem because we are going to be quantizing space of solutions, so all the constraints are automatically satisfied. And once you've done all that, the symplectic form takes the very natural canonical expression is just integral of delta pi wedge delta h. So in principle, this is all you need, because if you are given a family of solutions, you can always put it in a 3 plus 1 dimensional form. You can evaluate the canonical momenta, then you compute all these variations, and then you compute the symplectic form. So it is already doable. But technically, there is a much nicer way to do the computation in a covariant way. It's completely equivalent, but much more efficient. So what you do is that you covariantize the whole story. So you compute the symplectic form as an integral over your Cauchy surface of something which is called the symplectic current. And the symplectic current, it's a bilinear expression in variations of your matrix and the Christoffel symbols. So you don't need to put your matrix in the 3 plus 1 form anymore, in the split form. You just work with the covariant expression for the Christoffel symbols. And this gives you the same result. So in this form, there are several properties which are easy to see, convenient to see. So first of all, the symplectic current is conserved. And this is going to imply that the symplectic form is invariant under small variations of the Cauchy surface, and also under big variations, provided that field perturbations decay at infinity sufficiently fast. And the second important property for the whole picture to be consistent is that the symplectic form so defined is invariant under linear gauge transformations on the matrix. And these two properties are true only if you evaluate the symplectic form on a family of solutions. It makes no sense to evaluate it on some arbitrary family which doesn't satisfy the classical equations of motion. Of course, we are going to have some supergravity theory, so we'll have some extra fields, but the whole theory can be generalized to any Lagrangian setup. So in fact, if you have an arbitrary Lagrangian theory, let's say first derivative theory, but you can also generalize it to high derivatives, then you compute the symplectic current by wedging the variation of the Lagrangian with respect to the derivatives with the variation of the field. And then once you've done it, so if you apply this formula, for instance, to gravity, then you reproduce the Trankovich-Witten current. And this current, for the general Lagrangian theory, it also has the property of it's conserved, and it's the symplectic form is gauge invariant if solutions of equations of motion are quantized. And also, this formula is invariant under the choice of field. It's not sensitive to which field you choose in order to define a symplectic form. You can invariant under field redefinitions. So that's the method we are going to use. And here there is some important restriction which we have to take into account. So namely, we can only use this method to quantize the portion of the moduli space which corresponds to keeping all the fluxes fixed. And the reason is that I just give a simple example how this restriction arises. Suppose that you have some non-trivial topology and you have a gauge field on that non-trivial topology. When you compute the symplectic current for the electromagnetism, say, it involves variation of the field strength and also the variation of the gauge potential. So although the symplectic form is gauge invariant, you need to know the variation of the gauge potential to compute it. And so we must be able to choose the variation of the gauge potential which is regular everywhere on the Cauchy surface. And of course, if this restriction is to be satisfied, it's impossible to satisfy this restriction unless the variation of the field strength has zero flux on all cycles, on all two cycles in this case. And so this shows that this mini superspace method I'm describing, it's complementary, it's exactly complementary to the flux quantization conditions which we are used to talking about. So it's exactly complementary. And now, in the second part, I'd like to discuss one example when this whole framework works beautifully. It's the example of the bubbling ADS solutions, which fortunately Juan reviewed today before me. So in this case, we have moduli space which is characterized by droplets, by collections of droplets of arbitrary shapes and topologies in the plane. And we want to quantize this moduli space using the mini superspace method. The first problem is that we have to find, the problem is to find the restriction of the symplectic form of type 2B supergravity on this moduli space. And the first question is, which variations should we consider? So as I said, we have to keep all the fluxes fixed, and in this bubbling ADS story, keeping all the fluxes fixed means that all black areas, all droplet areas, but also all the white areas which are enclosed have to be kept fixed. This still leaves us, of course, with an infinite dimensional moduli space of variations of the droplets, which keep all the areas fixed. And those variations are parameterized by variations of the boundary curve. So you have to introduce a separate field for each boundary curve, and those are parameterized by variation. So the first step you do is you compute the symplectic form, the symplectic current, and the relevant sector of the type 2B supergravity in this case involves the metric and the phi form. So you just take the action of the type 2B supergravity, and then you apply the general formulas. So you, for the gravity part, you get, of course, the Tsongkhovich-Witten current. And then there is a contribution from the gauge from the F5 part, which involves the perturbation of the gauge potential. And this is the symplectic current of the theory in this particular case. So the solutions of the are characterized. The metrics are characterized by this function z. So we have some explicit expressions for the fields which enter the metric, for the fields vi and for the field z, which have the form of the convolution with the density z capital. So this is the Fermion density, takes values minus 1/2 inside the droplets and 1/2 outside the droplets. And the phi form is also known exactly, so you have to. But for the symplectic form, we have to find also the gauge potentials. So you have to solve equations for the gauge potentials. And for instance, in the axial gauge, which is most convenient, you'll get some explicit expressions for the gauge potentials. Again, there are some convolutions, and there is also some nonlinearity. So once we know all these things, we can vary them, then we can plug them into the symplectic current and integrate and get the symplectic form. But before we do it, there is a little subtlety to be discussed. Namely, as I said, the gauge potentials have to be regular for the whole thing to be consistent. And if we use the axial gauge, which is the most convenient from the technical point of view, from the computational point of view, then the gauge potential is actually going to be to have a singularity on the y equals zero plane, because this gauge fields B and B tilde tend to a constant, but the spheres shrink on the y equals zero plane. So you have to, what you have to do is that you have to find a gauge transformation which is going to be droplet dependent and which will set the variations of the gauge potential to zero on the y equal to zero plane. And you have to use only those gauge transformed field variations to evaluate the symplectic form. Well, this can be done. And the result of this computation is that you can, since the singularity is so simple, the result of this computation is that you can keep using those singular gauge potentials. But you just have to add some boundary compensating term, which involves the parameters of those gauge transformations which are needed to make our gauge potential perturbation regular. So there's going to be a bulk term in the symplectic form, and there's going to be some boundary term. And it is this boundary term which we missed in our first paper, and that's why our answer was a factor of 2 off. So the simplest computation which can be done is the perturbations around the plane wave. So in this case, the droplet just fills the lower half plane, and you do the wavy line approximation, which means you perturb the boundary shape from x2 equal to 0 to x2 equals some small function epsilon of x1. And now you have to express all the variations of all the fields via this perturbation epsilon of x1. Then you plug it into the symplectic current, then you integrate, and in this case, you don't have to think hard, all the integrals can be done in a pretty straightforward way, and you get an answer. You get an answer which is diagonal in the momentum representation. So you Fourier transform epsilon, and then you get epsilon p, wedge epsilon minus p, and then there is this kernel I over p, which is odd, an odd function of p, as it should be, since it's an antisymmetric expression for the form. And then, okay, there is a certain prefactor. So that's the answer that supergravity predicts to you. And this tells you how you are supposed to quantize these solutions from a supergravity point of view, because now you know the Poisson brackets of epsilon. You promote those Poisson brackets to commutators, and you get some U1 Katz-Moody, and basically you get just a bunch of harmonic oscillators. So, but now what we want to do is, of course, to compare it with the free Fermion side. And for that, you have to compute the symplectic form on the free Fermion side. And this can be done directly in the large N limit. And what you have to do is to use something which is called hydrodynamic approach, and it's been used in the quantum Hall effect theory for many, many years. And the idea is that you just compute the total energy of the droplet, which is a function of the boundary curve, gamma of s. So you integrate the one particle Hamiltonian over the phase space. And then you know that the boundary curve has to satisfy the Hamilton equation with a certain Poisson bracket. But also, this is the description of this, the collective description of the system. But you also know a one-particle description of the system in which the fermions move independently in the potential. So you just have to match these two descriptions. And once you've done it, you find the symplectic form which generates this Hamilton equation. So it can be conveniently written as an integral over the perturbation, delta gamma perpendicular, which is the perturbation in the normal direction. And I'm using here the natural parameter, the length along the curve, and the kernel, which is signum f minus f prime, so it's the sine function. And this perturbation has to satisfy the constraints that the total area has to be fixed. Delta gamma perpendicular integral should be zero. And you see that this already, so what it basically, that it agrees with the computation we did with the gravity side, because the Fourier transform of the sine function is exactly 1 over p. And actually the coefficient also agrees. So this shows that the whole picture is consistent. So I'll briefly discuss now the general droplet case. So, in the general droplet case, you can no longer just do the integrals explicitly. It's just too hard. You have to have some way around. So what you do is that you compute the symplectic current in terms of variations of all the functions entering the solution. So you have z small, vi. You have also variations of the gauge fields, b and b tilde. And of course, all these things depend in turn on the fermion density function z capital. But you see that it's a horrendous nonlinear expression. So the only way you can hope to do the integral, which you have to do in order to compute the symplectic form, is that the whole thing will somehow localize on the boundary. And actually, you can show that the symplectic in this particular coordinates, the symplectic current is a total derivative. Actually, you only need the time component of the symplectic current. So it's given to by the y derivative of something plus the I derivative of something. Well, this y derivative term localizes on the y equal to zero coordinate boundary, and the second term simply doesn't contribute. So this representation saves the day. If it didn't exist, then there would be no hope to complete the computation. So now you have a bunch of y equals zero contributions, and once you add them, you get a certain integral, which is integral over the droplets. So it's y equals zero is g capital equals minus 1/2 over certain delta c wedge delta c, where delta c is equal to the convolution with a particular kernel of the perturbation of the droplet boundary. And so at this point you apply Stokes' theorem to rewrite it as an integral over the boundary, and then you just have to show that the fields which enter this expression, they actually tend to the perturbation of the boundary curve on the boundary, and lambda, which is the integral over delta c, tends to the integral. So you get the total agreement between the fermions and the gravity, even for general droplet case, also with the coefficient. All right, so I'm running out of time, so what I would like to point out is that this Trankovich-Witten-Zukerman method we are applying, it has some rather serious advantages over the effective action method which people are often using in these situations. Namely, in both cases you are quantizing quadratic fluctuations, but this effective action is method is it's essentially too laborious because you have to parameterize all fluctuations, not only along your moduli space. And also sometimes it's impossible to truncate the action only to the mode from your moduli space, because there are some angular momentum conservation constraints and so on. So to conclude, I talked about the mini superspace quantization method, which can be used to check or find microscopic duals to supergravity solution families. And if you have to use this method to solve a concrete problem, then you better use the covariant version of the method, which is the CWZ method. It's going to save you a lot of time. And also we demonstrated that using this method, the complete quantum equivalence between the bubbling ADS family of solutions and free fermions. And I believe that this method has lots of future applications. For instance, there is some need to derive the quantization of D1, D5 solutions, which appear in the Matur's program from the supergravity side. And in that case, you also have a prediction for the symplectic form. It's just the four chiral bosons. Also, as we saw in Josef's talk, there are some families of solutions of three charge D1, D5 black hole geometries characterized by arbitrary functions, and as far as I understand, in that case, you don't have any description of those functions which would be amenable to quantization, so you have to derive the description from supergravity. And also, okay, there are some other interesting families of solutions. You may hope to discover fractional statistics using this method. And finally, what we have to understand better is what is the role of corrections in this picture, how to incorporate corrections to this method, and also the role of supersymmetry, in particular the fact that in this bubbling ADS case the symplectic current turned out to be a total derivative, which saved the day and allowed us to complete the computation. It may be related to the fact that we are dealing with the supersymmetric solutions, and in fact it may be that for families of supersymmetric solutions, all this framework can be simplified one step further and be made really into a very nicely working machine. I'll stop here.